Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, man, Governor Jay Inslee, all the things he could use and should have used his veto pen on this legislative session, he decides to veto a budget proviso that would have required the state do more to notify communities that a sexually violent predator is going to be placed in their backyard. That's what he decides to veto. It goes without saying that some parents that have been at the forefront of this fight are none too pleased, and one of them will be joining us. Also, we'll be joined by Olga Sagan, who is running to represent downtown Seattle on the Seattle City Council. You know, Olga is someone whose campaign I'm certainly supporting and who I think, if elected, can do a lot for businesses in downtown Seattle and also change a political environment that I think is poisoning the rest of the state. Later on Florida Report today, a lot going on in the state of Florida. Governor DeSantis expected to make 2024 official. We'll discuss that. We'll also discuss his decision to send law enforcement resources down to the southern border. Later, we're going to talk about George Santos still in Congress, Lord help us, and a really strange article on the Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, that reads something like a softcore porn. Not that I've ever read softcore porn. We've got romance novel. Reads like a romance novel. But before we get to all that, a reminder of two things coming up on Saturday that you can take part in, and we really hope that you do. Undivided's Charity of the Year is We Heart Seattle, which is a citizen-led organization that just started by picking up some of this trash in homeless encampments that the government apparently couldn't pick up. And so there is a one day of service across the city of Seattle on Saturday. We Heart Seattle is going to be doing a litter pick as part of that, and I will tell you that the green belt that they're going to pick up is absolutely disgusting. And Andrea Suarez, the president of We Heart Seattle, was down there a couple days ago. And let's just say there's a lot of work to do. And let's just say if you decide to come help, you need to wear some very sturdy shoes and some clothes that you don't mind burning after we're done. If you are a subscriber on Patreon or Locals, I already put out a post for you guys with details on how you can register, and you do need to register ahead of time. It starts at 10 a.m. on Saturday. If you're not a subscriber, but you'd like to join our group, you can do so by visiting undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and there you can find out how to become a subscriber to support the show on Patreon or Locals. Event number two I want to remind you about, and this is a really great one, near and dear to Nicole and I's heart. Dory Monson, our late friend Dory Monson, was a big fan of Betting on the Ponies, and Emerald Downs is doing something really nice for him this weekend. They're hosting the Dory Monson Memorial Purse. It's going to be a race in honor of our friend Dory. We're going to be there. I know Dory's family is going to be there, and I'm hoping that if Dory was someone who's important to you, that you'll come out for a day at the races, and racing's going to start at 2 p.m. You just buy your tickets at the door. Please say hello to us if you see us. But the Dory Monson Memorial Purse, this will be really fun. I really look forward to channeling my inner Dory Monson and picking a winner. Nicole, are you going to be betting?
Well, I'm going to give it a try.
Okay.
I might need some advice. I'm not real skilled at this. And we only went one day. We were supposed to go a couple times with them, and it just never worked out. But I gotta get some advice. So,
well, if you lose all your money,
anybody has advice,
I'm not moving up payday for you. Okay. So I'm not going to give you a payday loan. So anyway, so I really hope you guys can make it to one or both really of fun. Those events. It'll be super fun. So,
and we're going to get fancied up right in between them.
I know. We will take a shower between picking up used needles and going to the horse races.
Are you
going to
go hat? Are you wearing a hat?
I always have to wear a hat. I'm so pale. Oh, I think it's going to be nice this weekend. At least I hope it's going to be nice. Okay, well, okay. We look forward to that. Say hi to Nicole and I if you see us. And we look forward to getting together to clean up some garbage and other stuff that hopefully isn't covered in gross stuff that I can't get off. All right. A little sip of my espresso for this next one, because I got to say, I try not to get triggered. I get triggered not over silly things, but over serious things. And I am full-blown triggered over this today. So we have talked a lot on the show about this fight in communities like Tenino and Enumclaw, Washington, to push back against what's called SVP, sexually violent predators, from being placed in less restrictive facilities in their communities. So Washington is an interesting state when it comes to sex offenders. So you've got your, I guess for lack of a better phrase, I'll call it a run-of-the-mill sex offender who, you know, gets convicted, serves their time, gets released into the community, and then you can look them up on some database online and see, hey, are there any sex offenders in my neighborhood? Then there are the worst of the worst of the worst. And they're called sexually violent predators, and they are placed, they're so bad that the state deems them irredeemable, and they're placed on an island away from the rest of us. There's a reason for that. It's because of all the sex offenders out there who are all bad, they are the worst and the most incapable, according to a court of law, in not reoffending. People out at McNeil Island, with the other SVPs, these are people who in a lot of instances have repeatedly victimized sometimes young kids. These are bad people, okay? But under the law, we have something called the Constitution, and you know I love the Constitution. You can't just throw an American, even a horrible, awful American, on an island and forget about them. So in order for it to be constitutional to do that with these sexual deviants, you have to give them a path to be able to get off the island. And so essentially what's happening is there can be a petition, maybe it's from the offender themselves, and they petition to say, hey, I'm rehabilitated, I want to get off this island, and if a court grants it, then they can be moved into these less secure facilities in neighborhoods across the state, in communities across the state. And there's something called this equal share clause, which means if you've got X amount of sex offenders from this county on McNeil Island, then you have to have a facility in that county to house them if they get off McNeil Island. So you've had this massive push when communities were blindsided by these placements. One of them happened in Enumclaw, where you've got a guy who on multiple occasions sexually assaulted or abused young women. He gets placed, unbeknownst to the community, at a less secure facility, just a few yards from a bus stop. And they're like, what the hell? And they fought, but this guy's still there. And then Tenino succeeded in stopping the placement of SVPs in a house out on the outskirts of Tenino. So as all of this was boiling over during the legislative session, there was a budget proviso that was added to the state budget that was signed by the governor that would have required something very common sense, and it had bipartisan agreement, that the state has to do more to notify communities when one of these perverts is going to move in next door. There's nothing controversial about that. These are the worst of the worst of the worst sex offenders. They were so bad they had to be put on an island. Yeah, if the state's going to let them come off the island into your backyard, yeah, the state should probably take just a modest amount of effort to notify you about it, to make sure that you can protect your kids, that you know who this guy is. Governor Jay Inslee, I kid you not, just yesterday, vetoed that budget proviso requiring that DSHS do more to notify communities of these placements. And the reason, his rationale for vetoing it, if it could make it worse, it actually makes it worse. The governor wrote that the provisos in question are, quote, administratively burdensome to the Department of Social and Health Services. Administratively burdensome. First of all, since when are you, a Democrat, worried about government being administratively burdensome? That's what you've built, is an administratively burdensome government. But of all the things, of all the red tape government bureaucracy that you're willing to accept, you are not willing to accept the burden of having to notify communities that the worst of the worst sex offenders are going to be put in their backyard. That, to the governor, is administratively burdensome. how incredibly offensive, how gross. That's why I titled this episode A Middle Finger to Parents, to these parents that have been fighting tooth and nail for just a little bit of heads up. God forbid the state that works for us gives us a heads up if there's someone being placed in our community that has repeatedly sexually abused children. God forbid that that's a little bit administratively burdensome. I will say I loved two Republican lawmakers, including the House Minority Leader, put out a statement on this, and they represent the Enumclaw area, and so they've obviously had experience with this particular issue. And they wrote in a joint statement, "This stubborn approach to governing is exactly why so many of our constituents on the Enumclaw Plateau were thrilled to hear this would be Governor Inslee's final term." And I absolutely echo those sentiments. So when I heard this news, one of the first people I reached out to is a woman named Sarah Fox. We've had Sarah Fox on the show, and she is one of several parents in Tenino that had started this movement to push back against the placement of sexually violent predators on the outskirts of town there. And so I asked her to come on to react to this veto from the governor. Sarah, welcome back to Undivided.
Good morning, Brandy. How are you?
I'm doing good, except for this story, which is really peeving me today. First of all, when you hear that the governor says that this would be too much of a burden on the state to let communities know about these placements, how does that strike you, ma'am?
It angers me. The word burden. How do you put a burden on Department of Social and Health Services? That's their job, is to make sure that we are all safe. So to burden them and the community is basically running amok with these SVPs out in our backyards. It angers me, absolutely.
Do you feel like some of what you guys have been fighting for is for naught?
We do. However, we're not going to give up. This just shows that the community has to watch for each other's backs and that our governor does not care about public safety. He's more concerned about criminals' rights. He's more concerned about meeting the needs of the criminal, the sexually violent predators, more than the taxpayers themselves. And that's disheartening. And I got to be honest with you, Brandy, he is going to be leaving this state a mess. So I'm glad this is his last term because we're in a big hole.
Yeah, and it's not just about not respecting or caring about public safety. You know, if you're in the school of thought, which I know some people are, that, hey, these guys have to go somewhere, apparently. To just say that community members don't also have a right just to know, you know, just to be informed, just to not be cut out of the loop. So from what you guys went through in the fight you guys had, and, you know, you were successful in making sure that that facility did not open. And I do credit you guys in large part to raising such hell over it. What would your advice be for parents in other communities across the state about how, absent notification from the state, they can be aware of these things happening?
I think my advice is to stay strong as a community and don't give up. I mean, we're dealing with large agencies. We're dealing with the governor. We're dealing with the attorney general's office. We're dealing with the court systems. And although criminals do have a right to go somewhere after they serve their sentence, we have a right to know if these sexually violent predators are our neighbors. And so my advice is to people is communicate with each other, talk with each other, and ask questions. Do your own research. And before you know it, it's like Enumclaw. They already have a sexually violent predator established in their backyards right next to a school bus stop. So you have to advocate for yourself and you have to stay strong as a community because this bipartisan bill that got vetoed, you know, everyone was trying to do their part and the good old Inslee on his throne just poo-pooed it. And I have no idea why, because if he talks about safety concerns with Washingtonians, what a hypocrite. This makes zero sense to me. So my advice to everybody is watch each other's backs.
Yeah. And finally, where are you guys taking your fight and your movement? Because you built this real coalition of parents that, you know, found their voice, wanted to speak up, wanted to keep their kids safe. So what is ahead for you guys?
We kind of partnered up with the folks in Enumclaw. You know, we attended their meeting a couple of months ago and giving them facts and information and different avenues that they can go down, you know, go down and look at the Odyssey system down at the courthouse, pull those records of the individuals that's being released, see their conditions of the release, and be vigilant. Pass out flyers. We basically going back to the community. You know, we talk to the people to Enumclaw. We give them tips and tricks, if you will, on what they should do. Talk to everybody in the police department, county commissioners. Everybody needs to be hands on decks with this. We can't change the law, but we can fight. We can still fight.
I love it. Well, Sarah, I'm glad you're still fighting. Sorry that the governor has, you know, no regard for the people that he serves, but I'm glad you're still a voice on this. So thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Brandy. Thanks again.
Yeah, and Sarah and the other parents who've been involved down there are just absolutely great. And I mean, I just feel for them. It's like, you know, they couldn't get a bill through, a bipartisan bill that would have sought to not only halt the placement and removal of these sexually violent predators from McNeil Island and their placement in the communities, but it also would have required increased transparency for communities. There was bipartisan support for those proposals, but they didn't get across the finish line. And then you have a little bit of a longer period of time during the legislative session to sneak things in the budget. As long as they're tied to the budget. And so they were able to get this in, and for the governor to just veto it. Why? I mean, honestly, he had to go out of his way to veto this, to say communities do not deserve to know or have a heads up if these people, you know, the rape kids are going to be put in their backyard. Shame on him. And you know what? I know that Republicans in that statement, and Sarah, you know, expressed their happiness that this is the governor's final full year or final term. But look, if you think if Bob Ferguson wins, you think he's going to be any different? No. He's not going to represent some sort of substantial shift in the way that they value input from voters and value public safety. And so that's just as terrifying to me. And that's really what this comes down to is I think our expectations have become so low of government that we forget that they are supposed to be working directly for us. We pay them. We elect them. And so for Governor Inslee to take this active step to say, meh, you don't get to know what's happening, something so serious, absolutely shameful, absolutely shameful. Okay, let's move to the city of Seattle now. We talked about earlier this week, Olga Sagan, the owner of Piroshki Piroshki, announced her bid to run for District 7, the council seat that represents the downtown area. And look, I'm glad, and I've been clear, I donated to her campaign. I think that she would be a great addition because of what she's gone through as a business owner. You know, we've covered that extensively, just how horrible things were outside her location on 3rd Avenue. I mean, absolutely despicable, and people using the front of her business as a drug shelf. And so she has gone through all of this in this whirlwind of the pandemic and then, you know, coming back from the pandemic to that and then trying to get a hold of city leaders to no avail to help. And so Olga was nice enough to join us a few days after launching her campaign to talk about the message that she is going to try to get across to not only residents downtown, but to business owners like herself. Olga, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you so much for having me back.
And I'll just, in full transparency, I've been very clear that I am in full support of your campaign. I let people know I donated to it. Of course, we still have to ask the hard questions, and so we'll still stay true to that obligation. You've been toying with this for a while. Can you explain what kind of made you make that final decision to say, let's get into it?
So I think it was your show, right? When I kind of like, okay, you know, I really am contemplating to do this. Was it a couple months ago?
Yeah.
It was a hard decision. It was, I think there is a fancy word for it, and I don't remember right now, when you're not sure in yourself. And God, I don't remember that word right now. English leaves me. First thing leaves me is my English. So it's not sure in me, in myself, in me being Russian, in me being an immigrant, in, you know, can I do it? Can my family support it? Can my girls support it? It's just all these insecurities, just insecurities, pretty much. And, you know, I need to learn a lot. And I'm a good learner. I learn a lot really fast, but I'm realizing how much I need to learn right now. Because if I can speak from business perspective really well, because it's in my heart and I can feel it. So how do I get to the same level on all other issues that people care about? So that's kind of was the biggest part for me in there. But, you know, I decided that I'm going to throw my hat in and I'm just going to hit the ground running. I hope I can learn right now a lot between all the fundraisers and all the other events. This is all new to me. So it's been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the campaign stuff that can come, it's the actual issues. And, you know, as someone, we've highlighted your story a lot, who's tried to operate a business in the heart of the city and had some real challenges with it. For you, as you head into this campaign, as you meet with people, as you speak with voters, what are the primary issues that your campaign is going to be about?
So the primary issue is going to be the issues of people in my district. So I really have to, I learned basically last 2 weeks that, you know, Seattle and district are two different things. Well, I knew Seattle district, but these issues in my district is the only issue that I really need to represent and really focus on, because people in my district are the people who are representing me. So I really have to step back and understand, okay, what is my district? The good thing is my district is a lot of businesses, and I know business. I know business. I maybe not the best. I still have always a lot more to learn. I have to always learn more, but I know the basics. I can feel it. I can understand it. So I got that covered. Let's go to next, safety. Let me start learning about safety, but safety from the policy perspective, right? Because that's a whole new thing for me. So I'm learning now about safety right now on the WeCare team, and what does WeCare team does, and what's their budget? Are they successful? Is it a good pilot program? Is it something that City of Seattle can adopt? Is it something I can vote for and support, or something that we need to revisit and look at? So I think safety and bringing businesses back, because what I feel is that businesses are people. And from my experience in Seattle, we have one of the best. Everyone has bad players. Every single industry has bad players. But in Seattle, overall, we have one of the most incredible business owners I have ever seen, who care about their employees, who pay good wages, who care about their community, who cares about art and a lot of other things. So we really have to change the narrative that we don't have Walmart headquarters in Seattle. We have Piroshki in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, we have other many, many businesses. I'm not supposed to, I think, say it, but you all know all those amazing businesses who give money back to the community, who support community. That's the businesses we're talking about. We're not talking about Walmarts of the country. So really understanding that we are people, we're good business owners, and we are part of it, and how can we make it better? And we are part of 60% of Seattle revenue. So when you get rid of businesses, who is going to pay that 60%? It's going to go back to the residents. Where are we going to get money from? So I need to understand this whole ecosystem of problems and from different perspectives, not just business owner. Can I share? I read some book that inspired me so much.
Yeah.
It's actually part of my inspiration. It's called Local Politics Matter. If you ever have a chance, and I have been very bad civically engaged before, and I admit it, and I'm changing things right now, and I'm learning, and I'm going to do better. And that book, it showed me that I need to do better. It's called Local Politics Matter. Please read that if you have a chance. Open my eyes that I'm not a business owner. I'm a human in downtown Seattle. I'm a resident in downtown Seattle. I am a business owner on top of being all those other things in downtown Seattle.
Well, I'm always up for a good book recommendation, so I'll put that on my list. You mentioned Seattle has a lot of business owners, and I have spent some time since you announced your candidacy officially on Mother's Day talking to some folks who are connected in the business community, and I think conventional wisdom would say, oh, small business owner running, the business community would support them. But what I've heard is that there is some fear, some hesitancy from the business community to go against Andrew Lewis. Have you heard that?
I will not entertain the rumors that I heard, especially now on your radio here, especially in the position that I'm in. All I know is that Lewis's policies are for flourishing cities and not going back to basics. You should read an article today in Seattle Times. It's a great article about Lewis's stance and my stance. It really showcases what Lewis's strong suits are, which is environment, which is some other things that is a little bit hard to really make a difference in District 7 when you're focused on environment as much as you need to focus on environment. And then you can read a little bit about my background and my politics. So I'm not going to entertain what other business owners are saying or feeling. I'm just going to show them what I can and cannot do, and I will have them decide and make decision for themselves what they want to see.
Can you talk more about that? I think that's an interesting statement, that his policies are better suited for a city that's flourishing versus your ideas better suited for a city that's struggling. How so?
I think it comes from my immigration and how the way I did business and the way I kind of grew up is I will never hire someone to do dishes without knowing how it is to do dishes. I will never hire someone to do something. I will have to learn to understand and feel what does it take to do dishes? What does it take to cashier? What does it take to be an immigrant? What does it take to be a business owner? I can feel it. I can feel outside when I come out how strange it is outside and how scary it is outside. I can feel this, my teenage daughter who is scared, what is going on. He just cannot relate to it, not because he is, you know, not because he just doesn't have that experience. He's an attorney. So he cannot have experience of an immigrant business owner who is doing dishes naturally. And it's not his fault by any means. It's his just environment that he grew up in is not the environment that Seattle needs now. And we now need to go back to doing dishes and cleaning things up and creating better lighting and kind of going back to basics, in my opinion.
Yeah, Andrew Lewis, though, has spent, and this is the reason why, one of the reasons why your campaign is the first campaign I ever donated to, because I see someone like Andrew Lewis who has flip-flopped on his position so much, particularly on public safety, you know, campaigned on wanting to hire more police officers, turn around, supported the defund movement. And for the last year, he's been trying to rehabilitate that image, you know, publishing op-eds in the Seattle Times, acting as if he's always known and always cared about the public safety crisis when history just does not say that. So I guess, how do you combat Andrew Lewis's efforts over the past year to kind of rewrite history and make people forget about what he's contributed to in terms of the decline of public safety? How do you combat that rewriting of history?
I don't want to point fingers and critique. I will just tell you how I would do it. If I have changed, I feel changing your mind is okay. That's how we grow. That's how we get better. Is sometimes we proven to be wrong, and that's okay to be wrong. Let's look at us, but we have to own it. We have to own that I made a mistake. You cannot, I would not gaslight people. Oh, that's not what you imagine I did. That's not what I would do. I would own, hey, I made a mistake. I learned from it. Here is me being humble and relatable, because every single person I know in my world makes mistakes. I have made plenty of mistakes in my life as well. So I think that's just a different approach.
Yeah. One of the paramount issues, you know this very well because your location down on 3rd Avenue, the front of it was being used as a drug den for a long time. I don't know, maybe it still is at night. There is this lingering debate, and it's been a debate in Seattle for some time. We're now seeing it at the state level about the extent to which addiction should be a criminal matter, should be a law enforcement matter. Where do you stand on that issue to you? What is the appropriate balance for those people who you've seen outside your bakery doing drugs day and night? What is the appropriate balance between a law enforcement intervention and a treatment intervention?
I think you're touching up on a very good question. So what you're touching up is on a lot of topics that I'm struggling with. It's where does city end? Where does county begin? When, you know, all this, you know, incredible complex environment of politics and policies and different departments that can or cannot make a difference. So that's one topic, right? So it's really, we have to dissect that. But as far as my opinion on people who need rehabilitation, I believe there should be resources, but there has to be accountability. So how do we balance having available resources, not necessarily through the city, maybe federal resources, but also create accountability with maybe that is policing. I don't personally feel that police are trained enough to deal with this person who has a mental illness, you know, mental crisis. If they're not danger to the society, there should be some other option there to help mitigate the situation. That's my opinion for now. I need to learn more and I might change it later when I educate myself better. But this is me saying truth right now 3 days into it.
Yeah. At the same time, you do have a campaign. I mean, you're in it and you have to start convincing people to vote for you and to give you money.
Absolutely.
So as you go chat with business owners in particular who have been dealing with what you have been dealing with as a business owner for a long time, how do you convince them or what do you tell them about how you're going to make the situation outside their storefronts better? Because I imagine that's what they're
absolutely
going to want to know.
That's a real answer right now as well, because I am dealing with this right now. So my real answer as a business owner, I have seen this We Care team outside. I don't know if we have enough time, but the story about We Care team was incredible because I was walking with my dog at 7 a.m. in the morning and I saw this people in uniform came up to someone who was in crisis and start talking to them. And I was, who are those people? Because the amount of care that they actually, the amount of connection I saw and humility and humanity in that interaction was so impressive to me, but that I wanted to know what is the background of the people who are doing it, because it was pretty incredible. I have seen that helping. I have seen that with my own eyes helping. I don't know why they don't do it 24/7. I'm not sure why are they here from 7 to 9. Those are the things I'm going to find out. But this is actionable things that I have seen myself helping create better, safer downtown in a way that respect humanity part of this equation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to look more into the We Care team and sort of what their funding sources are, because it's the first time hearing about them. Let's end with this, Olga, because I know you've got another interview to get to. Seven council seats on the ballot in November. You're running for one that has an incumbent in it. What do you think is at stake this year in this election for the city of Seattle?
Future of City of Seattle. It's the future of the city. At the rate that these people are moving, at the rate that people are tired, at the rate that people are dying, it's the future of the city.
All right, Olga Sagan, I appreciate it. Good luck to you. Like you said, you're just a few days in, and I'm sure we'll have you back on many times.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, we are going to talk about the Supreme Court refusing to block a ban on certain semi-automatic rifles. Does that spell anything for Washington State's ban? And also, George Santos is still a member of Congress. And he shouldn't be. But first, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge with First Mark Insurance. Mike and I did it. We're now members of the First Mark family. And it's a really good process. And really, there's no downside. It just, the only thing it costs you is a little bit of time to go to firstmarkinsurance.com, click on the First Mark Challenge. And they'll go over all your existing policies, whether you're paying too much for things you don't need or whether you aren't covered in the way that you need to be to protect what you have. Here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of Firstmark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become Firstmark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to Firstmark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the Firstmark challenge is.
Yeah, and Mike and I did the First Mark Challenge, had a couple meetings with them, and then they showed us that we were really undercovered. And we kind of knew that going in, especially with the house. And so we were able to get much better insurance at about the same price. So it was a no-brainer for us after we went through the process. The only thing that could happen if you do the First Mark Challenge, like the worst case scenario, is you walk away and you don't change your insurance and you just stay with what you have, and they'll let you know if that's the best thing for you. So check out firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge and maybe you too will become a member of the First Mark family. Okay, before Unbelievable, really quickly, I just want to get to this because it's relevant to something happening in Washington State. As you know, our state joined several others in banning certain semi-automatic rifles. They call them assault weapons, weapons of war. Well, the Supreme Court, so Illinois had passed a similar ban on those types of firearms, and the U.S. Supreme Court decided not to block that the implementation of that law in Illinois while it works its way through the courts, which I thought was very interesting. I mean, you definitely have a conservative court that has shown that it is certainly on the side of the Second Amendment. This is the article from the Associated Press. Supreme Court lets Illinois keep ban on sale of some semi-automatic guns for now. And there's not really an explanation for why they decided not to grant the emergency injunction. There weren't any justices that released any sort of public dissent on it. So it's sort of hard to know exactly where they're coming from on this. And we'll see. Again, Washington State resulted in several immediate lawsuits when the governor signed a similar ban into law here. And so that is going to work its way through the courts. And I know there's some hope that, you know, maybe they can have some sort of emergency injunction, because it is difficult for firearms dealers to figure out. And it's also difficult from an implementation perspective when you have a law that you know is going to be subject to constitutional challenges. But you're like, I don't care. I'm going to put an emergency clause on it anyway, so it goes into effect right away. And then it could be halted a few months down the road. It could be completely overturned a year down the road. And so you're really putting, maybe this is the point, putting firearms dealers in this weird situation where they're like, what do we do with the inventory we have in the meantime? So anyway, I just wanted to update you on what happened with the Illinois ban and the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, it can go into place while it works its way through the courts. Certainly not what Second Amendment folks wanted to see happen there in Illinois, but worthy of discussing. Okay, let's get to our segment on Believable. George Santos is still in Congress, and it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. This is really disappointing to me because I talk a lot about how when you accept something that your own party is doing that you probably shouldn't from a moral perspective, then you just give the other party carte blanche to go, you know, meet you down at that level, and then everybody has this just continuing decline in standards and morals, and I don't know where the bottom is. I pray to God that we're close to it. I mean, George Santos has been indicted federally. It is proven that he lied about every major facet of his background to get elected to Congress. He's the Republican from New York. And there was an opportunity. So there was an effort from Democrats to say, hey, let's hold a vote to expel him from Congress. And Republicans were sort of faced with a choice. They could either say, okay, let's allow that resolution to come forth. Let's vote on it. They could just table it because they're in control of the House, right? They could just table it, say, we're not doing anything with that. Or they could vote to send it to ethics. And that's what they have decided to do. Here's the article from the Associated Press. Effort to expel Santos falters as Republicans vote to send a measure to ethics committee, which I just think is the coward's way out. It's the, you have, in fact, I'll play this clip from Manu Raju with CNN. He talked to two other members of Republican members of Congress from New York who they say, I want Santos gone. But they ended up siding with their party to send this to ethics rather than take a vote on the resolution.
I would have absolutely voted for the expulsion. The fact is that after the Republicans whipped it, they didn't have the votes. I look at this as the next best thing and the quickest way, as I said in my remarks, to rid the stain of George Santos from the House of Representatives.
Whatever process gets us to George Santos no longer being a congressman as quickly as possible is the one that I embrace. This will do that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but voting to expel him would be the quickest way to make sure, well, actually, George Santos resigning would be the quickest way to make sure that he's not a member of Congress. But allowing that resolution to come to the floor for a vote would be a pretty quick and efficient way as well. But there's apparently what happened behind the scenes. The Republicans, you know, they in their caucus realized that they didn't have overwhelming support in their caucus. So instead of a few of them siding with Democrats to allow the resolution to come to the floor, they just took the coward's way out and sent it to ethics. And look, I know some people might argue, well, you know, innocent until proven guilty or whatever. But to me, the federal indictment is just sort of the cherry on top of a really gross pie because the lies were enough. The lies were more than enough. And having from this position, you know, railed against, now I'm going to forget his name. Who's the lion representative from our state?
Oh my gosh. I know his name. Hang on.
Oh my gosh. Google it. How can I not? Lion George. Somebody's going to tell me in the chat. Why can I not think of the liar's name? You tell me. When you come up with it. You know, we railed against this Democrat that got elected lying about his military service and other aspects of his background in Washington State. And I'm sorry, you have to have, Clyde Shavers, who Democrats in Washington State, they didn't make any effort to get Clyde Shavers out for telling horrible, demonstrable lies. And so then you see Democrats are like, oh, you know, George Santos has to go. Somebody has to do what's morally right. And if Democrats won't do what's morally right when it's their person, why would Republicans do what's morally right when it's their person? And that's the situation that we found ourselves in, because people side with their politics ahead of their morality, which is a horrible place to be as a country. Anyway, and then I get the occasional person who'll be like, well, all politicians lie. Not to this extent. Not to this extent about like the very fabric of who they are as a person. So absolutely unbelievable to me. I really wish Republicans, you know, would take the high ground on this and say, that's not who we want representing us. It makes the rest of us look bad. But then I guess their argument would be, well, would Democrats take the high ground? Probably not. Okay, coming up next, we're going to get to Florida Report. A lot of news on the DeSantis front. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? If so, don't do it. Don't choose a real estate agent until you check out our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He and I chatted about what he can offer you when you're selling your home that maybe a traditional real estate agent cannot.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwes.com and go to the sell a house feature, and you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website, and you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm going to treat you fairly.
Yeah, so if you're in the market to sell your home, visit sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. As he said, his cell phone number's on there too if you want to give him a shout and talk over, you know, this time what the market's like right now, what they can do for you that other real estate agents might not be able to. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, it's Thursday. That means it's time to check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State, and there is a lot happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just doing great. So great. So you guys have an exciting week ahead in store for you in Florida. It sounds like the worst kept secret in politics is about to come to fruition.
Yeah, it sounds like DeSantis is going to announce his bid for presidency next week, finally.
How do you feel about that as a, not as a seasoned correspondent for our show, but as a Floridian about the fact that he just ran for governor, gets elected, now he's going to turn around and run for president?
I feel like in this, where we're at right now, I feel I'm glad that he's going to, because he's actually going to give kind of Trump a little run for his money. And for without him, I just don't feel like there's anybody that's going to be able to contend with Trump. And so I, as a Floridian and an American, am looking forward to like a pretty decent presidential race when it comes to the Republicans. I don't know. I've never been in a state where my governor is also running, you know, and campaigning, and you guys have. And it sounds like Inslee was gone a lot. So I'm sure DeSantis will also be gone a lot. And I do know that the Florida legislature had passed a bill back in April that allows him to announce his presidency and continue as our governor. So hopefully he can get both jobs done simultaneously.
Yeah. And when you say our governor ran for president, I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would go that far. He tried very hard to run, but I think DeSantis will automatically have a much better campaign than Jay Inslee did. On the presidential run thing, though, I'm sure you saw it. You know, the mayor of Miami, who we've talked about a lot, Francis Suarez, did this article in Politico, and they were talking about he's mulling a presidential bid. And then he pinned the article to his Twitter account as his top tweet, which makes me think like he's definitely going to do it.
I kind of feel like, and maybe this is a better kept secret that I'm just kind of assuming, is a vice presidential team up. You know what I mean? That might be something that, because he didn't ever kind of directly speculate towards running for president, you know?
Oh,
so I'm
has.
Thinking that maybe we might find out a little bit more about his intentions with that, with doing that after DeSantis announces.
Well, a
his
lot of
run.
Some people run for presidency so they'll be considered on a vice presidential ticket. And so certainly, yeah. But he has, you know, talked about the possibility of running for president. Now, whether that's like a means to an end or whether he wants to boost his name recognition across the state so he can maybe be the next governor of Florida, I think that's potential too. But I actually don't think it would be very smart to have two Floridians on the same ticket for the presidency, because I think wisdom is that you want people who are a little bit different and can attract different areas of the country. And so I'm not sure that would be very smart. But either way, I'm really glad we have a segment called Florida Report, because you're going to be doing a lot of Florida reporting for us.
We're going to be busy these next few months, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And year.
Now, although I agree with you that any challenge to Trump would be good, I'd rather have DeSantis than Trump. There are some things going on with DeSantis and some other red states that we've talked about before. I don't agree with. I mean, so we went through our whole, you know, let kids do whatever they want without the consent of their parents when it comes to gender care. And Florida's been kind of the opposite. So talk about the bill that DeSantis signed that has to do with transgender care for kids.
So SB 254 is basically like the kind of the opposite of what it was yours, 5599.
Yeah.
Was that the number? Yeah.
Yes.
So what this bill does, there like people who are against this bill say it's like the state can now legally kidnap your children, which it's funny because it's for the exact opposite reason that your state can now legally kidnap your children. So we're just all living in an alternate reality. But basically, Florida judges or Florida courts can receive temporary emergency jurisdiction over kids if they are facing potential like threats or harm towards them because of wanting gender reassignment surgery, because parents maybe are forcing it on them, or because parents both can't agree with something. So they're like, there's like a custody dispute about it. I'm assuming that that's where people consider the state's ability to kidnap your kid is in that section right there.
It's fascinating.
Then there's also a section that talks about where parents can apply for a warrant to receive physical custody of a child if the two parents don't agree and that child has a more permanent resident within Florida. So like the state can intervene and help one parent maintain rights and custody over their kid if the other parent wants them to get gender reassignment surgery. So it's completely the opposite of what you guys kind of have going on.
But
there.
To me, it's two pages out of the same book. I mean, I don't know how you can be opposed to Washington's law and not be opposed to that law in Florida. Because if the true issue with 5599, which is for me is parental rights, where they say, you know, and again, I think it's state sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. If your kid wants some sort of gender care that a parent doesn't want them to have. Now it's the opposite in Florida where they're saying, you know, we want to take away the right entirely of a parent to be able to make these decisions in consultation with their child. And I think that's just as wrong. I think the government intrusion into the home and into parental rights and parental decision making, whether it's granting kids too much or not enough for parents and kids, it's just to me, it's wrong.
Yeah, and I agree with you because it is, you know, it's just like the opposite end of the same conversation, you know, like it's still just, it's really difficult. I think it's just difficult for these families. I think they just really need a lot more counseling as a family unit to help work them through situations like this that just come on such an individual basis. And there's no way that you can write down a family's story in black and white. You know, people have a lot to work on within the home. And I think that one of the great things about America is that the home unit is so important and it's focused on. So I think that everybody needs to back up a little bit and let families kind of handle things the way they need to handle them at home, you know?
100%. Government intrusion rarely makes things less complicated. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So I don't.
Well, this one also applies to some restrictions with adults too. People over the age of 18 seeking gender affirming care. There's clinics in Florida where there's no actually doctors present. There's just nurse practitioners. Now, people that are seeking and getting gender affirming care over the age of 18 have to show up in person, have this care, whatever the, you know, whatever treatment's done in person, and a doctor has to be present. So that's kind of putting a little more pressure on some of these clinics to maybe make it a little bit, not more difficult, but more official in regards to a treatment that's changing somebody's gender.
How would you get that treatment not in person?
I don't know if they send people home with things, you know what I mean? For like, you know, I don't really know much about the, about reassignment or reaffirming care. So I'm assuming it just has something to do with, instead of sending people home with things to like administer to themselves, they have to come in and have it done in the presence of a professional.
Yeah, it seems like a doctor should be there. One more thing I will give DeSantis a lot of credit for. We talked on the show yesterday about how Texas Governor Greg Abbott's like, hey, we need help down here. Send all available law enforcement. And to the best of my knowledge, only two states have responded, Idaho and Ron DeSantis in Florida.
Yeah, he's going to be sending over 1,100 state troopers, National Guardsmen to the border to help assist with whatever is coming and whatever they're already dealing with there. And I give him credit here because he's putting action where he talks, you know, and like whether it's something you agree with or something you don't, like you see him talk about something and then he puts action to it. And it happens pretty often with him. And Florida is not, you know, we're not far from the border. We do wind up with our own individual issues here when it comes to illegal immigration. So I think that if he wants support from other states, if we ever need it, he's going to give supports to states that need it right now.
Yeah, that's one thing I would be for sure about if he were president. I think that he would get the border crisis under control. Might not happen right away, but I think he would do what needs to be done. So kudos to him for that, because it's not just a border state issue. It's an issue for our entire country. So, all right, Miranda, good stuff. And I look forward to Florida Report next week after we have maybe a presidential candidate, Ron DeSantis, on our hands.
Yes.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Meow. And I did ask folks in the live chat, a poll in YouTube, the YouTube live chat, would you prefer DeSantis to be the 2024 GOP nominee over Trump? 77% said yes, 23% said no. And we'll get to your comments coming up in just a moment. But first, I am down 36 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, feeling great in time for summer, in time for my bachelorette party on the beach, in time for my wedding. And I'm just looking better too, let's be honest, okay? If you guys are interested, maybe like me, you put on a little weight or a lot of weight during the pandemic, and it's just time. I heard Eastside Weight Loss Clinic ads on the radio for 3 months before I finally reached out to them. And now I'm just thinking about, man, what if I had done it 3 months earlier? I could have just been feeling better way before I actually did. So I'm kind of bummed I waited so long, but I'm glad I did it. So if you have some extra weight that you'd like to cut and just get in shape, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Visit eastsideweightlossclinic.com. It's really easy. Just click on the calendar to make a free 15-minute consultation appointment with Dr. Ryan Coogan. You can do it virtually. He can explain the program to you, and if it's right for you, you'll just be off and running in time for summer. So check it out and make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast. Okay, let's get to your comments before we get to our closing sanity check for the day. On Governor Inslee vetoing improved notification of communities where a sexually violent predator is going to be housed, Matthew writes, Inslee vetoed that bill because those small communities tend to not vote for Inslee and Dems. You know, but the thing is the way those sexually violent predator placements work is they are going to be in counties everywhere across the state. So it's going to impact blue, red, urban, rural, everyone. Rick says the government is administratively burdensome to the citizens, Jay. Just more excuses from our criminal-loving governor. And again, you know, him using the excuse that, oh, requiring DSHS to do that is administratively burdensome. First time I've ever heard the governor concerned about something being administratively burdensome. Deborah says, before being convicted, these violent, predatory people were your relatives, friends, and neighbors. If and when they are released from confinement, they will return to being someone's neighbor. That's true, but, you know, the issue is that before they were convicted, they were someone's neighbor and people didn't know what they were capable of. And now we do. And so I understand that people have a right to try to rebuild their lives, certainly, but people also have a right to feel safe in their communities, or at least to know and have a say in these sorts of placements. Deborah went on to say, people need to return to personal responsibility and accountability for their safety and the safety of their children. It's the predators that haven't been caught or otherwise identified that you ought to be concerned about. I think you can be concerned about all of them. Linda wrote, I just sent the governor a message expressing my disappointment in his veto. Good job, Linda. Aaron said, I wonder if DSHS and the governor's office has communication about that provision that was struck. More digging. Yeah, I'm sure DSHS told him to do it. Mo writes, didn't they used to send out postcards when a sex offender moves into the neighborhood? I seem to remember this from several years ago. So in theory, even when they move in, there would still be the regular, they'd have to register as a sex offender. And so for like I said earlier, run-of-the-mill sex offenders, you can look up on databases and see if any are living in your community. There probably are some right now, but these are like a different level of sex offender, the ones who were put on McNeil Island. And so I think the argument from parents and community members has been, hey, give us a little extra heads up for these extra special sex offenders, extra violent sex offenders. On George Santos still being a member of Congress, Matthew says, the Santos issue is yet another example of why I say I'm an independent conservative, not a Republican. On DeSantis potentially making his 2024 bid official next week, Sergeant Pickles says, the fact he's allowed to keep the governorship while running is flat out wrong. I am neutral on him, but he will spend very little time running his state. And I will say, it is the complaint I had about Governor Jay Inslee, is he was gone like half the time for his failed presidential bid, out there earning like not even 1% of the vote. DeSantis will do better, and I think he actually has the potential to be elected president, but I think time will tell whether he's able to balance this job that he just asked for. He just ran and got reelected to the governorship. So he does have a responsibility to make sure he's still doing that job. And if he can't, it's up to people to hold him accountable. Let's see. One comment here on Olga. Matthew says, the one thing I would say to Olga is that you not only represent your district, but all of Seattle, as what the council votes on affects all Seattleites. And that's a good point, because she said, you know, I'm focused on the issues of my district, which I think is good. You want to be focused on the issues of your district, but you will have to take votes on things that impact everyone in this city of Seattle, not just people who live downtown. As always, great, great comments today. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? I don't get the desire to idolize politicians. I think it's a little insane. I see this sometimes with Donald Trump, where people idolize him in a way where they just think, oh, he can do no wrong. And I had to read. Now, I was a Pete Buttigieg fan when he was running for president, because he is incredibly intelligent and he's a good orator and I love a good speaker. And so I thought he was interesting, you know, from this kind of nobody mayor to trying to run for the presidency. Now, I think he's drank the Kool-Aid a little bit since being in the Biden administration, but there was this, a feature on him in Wired magazine. The headline is, Pete Buttigieg loves God, beer, and his electric Mustang. And I will tell you, no politician, no person working in government should be written about in this way. And just in a second, I'm going to read a passage from this. But I think it is incredibly, not just dangerous for regular citizens to idolize politicians, but it's certainly dangerous and destructive for the media to idolize politicians. This thing reads like a softcore porn, okay? I'm going to read a passage of it to prove that to you. Good music. This is perfect. Man, I got to get my softcore porn vibe. This is from the article, okay? Sure, the U.S. Secretary of Transportation has thoughts on building bridges, but infrastructure occupies just a sliver of his voluminous mind. As Secretary Buttigieg and I talked in his underfurnished corner office one afternoon in early spring, I slowly became aware that his cabinet job requires only a modest portion of his cognitive powers. Fortunately, he was willing to devote yet another apse in his cathedral mind to making his ideas about three mighty themes, neoliberalism, masculinity, and Christianity, intelligible to me. Who writes like that? Who writes like that? It is like a soft core.
Somebody that loves.
It's a love letter to Pete Buttigieg. Okay, we can stop the porn.
Are you sure? I like
yes. That's weird. It's insane to me. Again, it's one thing for regular citizens to put politicians up on a pedestal. It's another thing entirely for the media to do it. And you'll also notice the only politicians who get these glowing articles and these glowing features are Democrats, which I think further proves that the media really tends to favor Democrats. You would never see a glowing feature like this about Pete Buttigieg's voluminous mind, apps in his cathedral mind. You would never see that about a Republican ever. Now, I don't think it should be done for any politician, but at least if you're going to do it, you know, make some sort of effort at pretending that you also are, I guess, in love with Republicans. Very, very strange to me. Absolutely insane. It's not a sane thing to idolize a politician. Okay, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Don't forget about the two activities on Saturday. I hope to see you at one of them. We're going to be doing a litter cleanup 10 a.m. Saturday. You can find information about that on our Patreon and Locals pages. And the Dory Monson Memorial Purse happening at Emerald Downs in Auburn starting at 2 p.m. Race will probably be around 3, so I hope to see some of you there. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. Help support this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. Just click on support the show, and you can choose Patreon or Locals. There's really no difference between the two of them. In the meantime, on Sundays with subscribers this week, our exclusive show just for subscribers, I'll have an interview with one of the most progressive members of the state legislature in Washington State, Senator Joe Wynn, and we're going to have a fascinating conversation about race and racism. So if you want to catch that, sign up at undividedpod.com. I'll see subscribers on Sunday. I'll see the rest of you on Monday.